Thanks for listening to the Get Over Yourself podcast, brought to you by Carol Fit Stationary Bike Program, 8-minute workouts to get super fit. Perfect Keto, the cleanest, highest potency ketone supplements. MOFO, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Let's Get Checked, at home testing kits. Try LGC.com. Almost Heaven, beautiful compact home use sauna kits. Brad's macadamia masterpiece, the mind-blowing nut butter blend. And check out bradkearns.com/shop, my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance. And here we go with the show.
If we could have the ability, if we could expand our imaginations enough where we could say, my legs feel okay, my feet feel okay, my hips don't hurt like crazy, I can move, I can swim, I can jog. I'm so lucky I'm one of the people that can jog. You know how many people can't? You know, if you look at a graph, the stock market, and it drops 10%, and people say, and you say to somebody, okay, what is that when it does that? You show the graph where it's gone down 10%, they go, that's a correction. And then you go, nope, it's the beginning of a crash. And then you show the rest of the graph, and then you look back, and you go, wait a minute, why did I call it a correction? If an event is going to happen, we perceive it in one way, and then when we look back, and we, you know, the hindsight thing, we perceive it in an entirely different way, a more accurate way, because now we actually see what the heck things were. I have an opportunity to either make you feel good about that book or bad about that book. Everyone has that opportunity. And the closer and more respected the people in your life, the more power they have. And everyone, perfect strangers, have this power.
Introducing Let's Get Checked. It's a new company that makes comprehensive health, wellness, and peak performance metabolic testing more convenient than ever. You have to check these guys out right now. Go to trylgc.com/Brad, and you get a beautiful presentation of what they're all about. And what they do is at-home testing kits. That's right. They send you the kit in the mail to get the fluids they need, whether it's pricking your finger, urine, saliva. You just mail it in. Don't even have to go to the blood draw lab, and you get your report in 2 to 5 days online with all your results. And they offer all kinds of stuff for health and wellness. You get your male and female sex hormone panels, comprehensive nutrition panels, sexual health and disease screening, everything in the privacy of your own home. You know from listening that I've been a huge fan of going to the blood draw labs and tracking my numbers, especially my testosterone and my other adaptive hormones. Been doing it frequently, and that helps me really track the training and lifestyle patterns that optimize health and speed recovery, and also the stupid stuff that I do, overstress, overtraining patterns that trash my hormone levels, and then I can take corrective action. I love doing it. It's really popular, but it's a little bit of a hassle to go to the labs, make the appointment, wait around. So now you just go to trylgc.com/Brad, get a 20% discount on all their tests, and everything happens at home. It's fantastic. And check this out. The results are reviewed by their physicians. And if anything concerns you, you can schedule a phone consultation with a nurse and have 24/7 access to their staff through your treatment and your resolution. Oh, these guys are revolutionizing modern medicine and self-quantification. You're going to love it. It's so simple. The website presentation is really great. So try lgc.com/Brad, automatic 20% discount, or you can use the code Brad if you're on their website. Otherwise, let's get checked, everybody. Luke Shanahan is back, and it's about time, man. We got a lot to talk about. Hello, you hear me?
I hear you.
Luke Shanahan is back. And it's about time. We got a lot to talk about, man. How's it going over there in Florida?
I'll tell you what, it's as crazy here as it is anywhere else, I think. It's, first of all, Florida's already a little bit nutty. We've got alligators that wander up into the backyard. But yeah, everyone's spinning out of control as usual. But so far, Kate's been able to usher people through, this COVID stuff. And she's been explaining to me sort of the ins and outs of the science of it and all that. But strange times. So we were thinking, right, you and me, that it'd be a good time to talk about being in a period of transition and what, you know, you can do to make the most use of it, to use it as a plot point, to spin you into a better trajectory than you were before. And we're all in this together. And once Kobe Bryant fell out of the sky, you know, I think that was a message from the universe that, hey, guess what? Let's not forget all things are possible. Crazy things can happen. And, you know, that was just the overture to this craziness. So I think it's a good time to talk about working on what we can work on as we're, you know, where most of us are locked at home with our partners and with our families. And because of stresses and economic stresses and everything else, possibly at one another's throats more than we would like to be. So we thought, right, Brad, we thought this would be a good time to talk about some of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope no one's at each other's throats, and I hope we're, you know, looking on the bright side and trying to, I did a little breather show about the positive aspects of the quarantine, the social isolation, because I feel like there's some things in my life that are improved or going better. And one of them is my mindset, where anytime I have the slightest inclination to complain about something, I force myself to jump over to a gratitude position, just like you're instructed to in the books and the podcasts and people talking about this, but so much easier said than done. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. In the God Academy.
The God Academy, yeah. A momentous occasion here when we reveal the true author of that fabulous book.
That's right. We're revealing that for the first time ever on this podcast, by the way. Because up till now, people have presumed, because it says right on the book, it's written by Angelica Crystal Powers. Here's the book, and here's Angelica. Well, guess what, everybody? I am Angelica Crystal Powers.
So this has been Luke's top secret best-selling book on Amazon. It's been available for many years, but now we're going to highlight it and talk about, I think the intro you gave there, that nice intro, I think a lot of that's covered in the book, so we can kind of make this a personal growth and adjusting to strange times podcast session. And like great. I was saying, I'm forcing myself to be grateful for all the good things about this, and instead of whining and complaining that my spring break is ruined, as the Florida partiers who went viral with that video clip where they're bent out of shape because some stuff is closed while they came to party. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the hoarding shopping, I'm not participating as of yet. And my dream is that someday I'm going to walk into Costco and be able to grab a set of paper towels because everyone's already hoarded. And then thinking about, like, if no one had hoarded to begin with, Costco's never out of paper towels. They've never in history been out of paper towels. So why are they out now? It's like, let's keep that community mindset, going, so that we're not engaging in this, you know, strange, adverse human behavior. And I have to admit myself, Luke, that at the start of this, when the news reports were coming through, me and Moore and I were on a wild vacation where we were going to basketball games in Vegas and magic show and concerts in Nashville with the real estate conference, and walking around on Bourbon Street, checking it out with all these partiers. And I had no direct connection to the severity of what was coming, even though the news reports were hinting at that, because I had this sort of, I guess it was a self-absorbed mindset where I figured, like, I'm not going to get hit by some virus that's taking down old people because I'm too healthy and my lungs are strong. But I failed to make that connection of how my behavior can put others at risk until we all agree to quarantine on behalf of the people who are most vulnerable. I think Governor Cuomo said it best in New York. He said, you know, we're shutting the economy down for the most vulnerable 1%. And that's a big deal, but it's your grandma and your mother and my mom and your grandfather. And that's why we're doing it. And it's the right thing to do. And I think that's a good wake up call for everybody to realize that, you know, when it comes to a pandemic, it's a good way to show how connected we are and how our behavior affects others.
Yeah, it's funny. I talk about like being in the dark, but there's just seemed to be an electricity in the air. I think since, you know, Kobe's, you know, untimely and sad death, which, you know, I know hit you as much as it hit me. You're a super fan, you could say.
Well, you guys had that personal connection to him, and I can't imagine, you know, the level of that tragedy. And it hit me really hard. I mean, it's something that, you know, with my son going through the basketball years, and he was such a hero and represented so many things. And at the time the text message came onto my phone, I was talking with Dave Rossi, former podcast guest. And, you know, he's got his book, The Imperative Habit, talking about taking things for granted and, you know, being grateful for the present time and all that. And his comment to me, when the news came to us and we were driving in a car, he says, well, there's a guy who was almost positive. He had as much financial security as anyone could ever imagine. He was completely secure in every way until he wasn't. And he was making that point before the text message came in, that security is an illusion. Even financial security, relationship security, all these things that we count on to collect our assets and our things that we have going for us could be taken away at any time. And so we sure as heck better appreciate the present. And man, that was a tough way to get the message, with, you know, an icon being able to be taken down like that. But time to move on, just like his wife did such a great job giving that, you know, presentation in public and being so brave and strong. And she's got to go on and raise some little kids. So,
and it's an extraordinary thing, but it's absolutely true. There's the I mean, speaking of gratitude, I think we've all been to some extent, but I tell you, for me personally, I've been going through a massive learning curve over this past couple of months about a lot of stuff. And about a month and a half before any of this started, I just noticed that this book that, well, Angelica Crystal Powers wrote called The God Academy, which I actually wrote, and I didn't have a copy. And I said, I ought to have. I wonder, you know, it's been a long time since I've opened that book. It's been a few years, you know. So I ordered a copy, and it showed up, and I started leafing through. And then pretty much 2 days after it arrived, all this nightmare stuff, you know, in terms of the virus and then the economic downturn and, you know, which hit us as hard as anybody, just like anybody else, we're all in this together. But, you know, I started leafing through and Kate said, why don't you just open to a random page? And I just started reading. And every time it was like, where has this book been my whole life? And I thought, oh, wait a second, I wrote it, you know, but it was a good reminder of things like, you know, you brought up gratitude and how, you know, you said you were walking around a little bit with your, you know, head in the sky about, I'm not going to get this virus. Well, the first thoughts I was getting about the virus were selfish ones. I hope we don't get sick. I hope we don't lose, you know, all our money and can't, you know, can never retire and all that. And thinking about quality of life being reduced for me and mine. And instead, you know, my first thought should have been, wow, what it must be like to be a restaurant owner right now. Or, you know, wow, I hope that, you know, people who are really immunocompromised, you know, are going to be okay through this. And then in terms of finances, it shouldn't have been like, you know, wow, think of all the stuff we're not going to be able to get and all this. It should have been, hey, I hope that this prompts me to be more influential, not less influential, because that's where the riches are. That's where all the riches are. Wouldn't you agree? It's in your ability to influence in a good way and improve everyone else's life. That's where the money is. And how money plays a role into that, whether you have it or you don't, you won't know until you're right in the midst of it 10 years from now and you look back and go, well, I'll be damned. You know, the story that I was meant to tell, the narrative that God or the universe wanted me to tell, the place that I was supposed to, you know, play is exactly as it should have been. So, you know, you remember back when we were in Tulum, Mexico, right? I did a presentation there. You did a bunch of presentations, which all went really well. And back then I had a bruised foot that had really gotten me down. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, about 2 months after coming out down here to Florida, I was going paddle boarding. And as I was stepping onto the board, there was about a 6-foot alligator right there. And to avoid it, I tried not to step. I didn't want to hurt it. And I stepped on a branch. And now I've got the same injury on my foot again, which is slowly healing. You know, that takes a long time. But what you were mentioning about, you know, the tragedy, you know, with Kobe Bryant, but any tragedy and how it is a necessary component of gratitude. I mean, wouldn't it be great, you know, if we could have the ability, if we could expand our imaginations enough where we could say, my legs feel okay, my feet feel okay, my hips don't hurt like crazy, I can move, I can swim, I can jog. I'm so lucky I'm one of the people that can jog. You know how many people can't? You know, people who lose the use of their legs, they say, what do you miss? And you expect them to say, running through a field. What do you think they typically say?
I don't know.
I was surprised to hear from a number of different people who, you know, on Real Sports and other people who are interviewed. I always think they're going to, oh, do you miss basketball? Do you miss all this top end stuff? They're very humble about what they miss. They have a whole different gratitude about their legs that they couldn't without the loss of the use of them. They say, I miss going upstairs. Mm. I miss a full body hug. I miss being able to reach this thing from the top shelf. They're not talking about triathlons. We're talking about going up a few stairs and the absolute joy of that. How could you possibly know without having that experience that they've had? How could one, you'd seem odd to people. If you go up a flight of stairs and you turn to your friend and you go, God, how great was that? And they go, what? We went up a flight of stairs. And they go, are you all right? Did you take something? But if you said to them, oh, no, I forgot to mention, I had lost completely use of my legs for 5 years. So this is an absolute thrill for me. They'd go, oh, gosh, it really must be. That makes sense now. Why do we have to lose the legs first? Why can't we have that knowledge, that beautiful gratitude, that deep gratitude, and just carry it around regardless? We have to wait for the tragedy to get it. It seems like for most of us, but that... And I mean, certainly for me, but I'm really practicing this art of not just like, I'm grateful to have this cookbook, but you really got to imagine, you know, what if it just set up? What if it got lost or stolen? You really got to put yourself in like, no, it could be gone. Like you said, it's in everything, every object, every relationship, any financial security or other kind of security can go by in a flash. And you have to, in order to really fully dive into this deep gratitude thing, I think you really got to have the imagination to imagine what it's like if it were gone, and then really put yourself there and then replace it back in your life and go, oh, lucky me.
Yeah, I guess the parents wish the same for teaching the life lessons to their children instead of having everything to be learned the hard way. But it seems like all humans, you know, operate that way where it has to be completely visceral and actually, you know, get taken away and then given back to you. For you to, you know, have a position of gratitude, it's pretty frustrating to realize we're all in that category. I remember during the .com bubble of 99, 2000. Remember when the stock prices went crazy, and I was actually working in Silicon Valley at the time, and I made some bad decisions because, you know, why should I sell any stock? It's doubled in the last 3 months. Of course, it's on track to double again. And then when everything crashed. I made a flippant comment to a friend of mine. I said, you know, the next time there's a bubble, I'm not going to be so greedy. I'm going to, you know, sell my stock in a patterned manner like the professionals recommend. And he said, well, the next time there's a bubble, you're not going to know because that's the definition of a bubble. It's like, that's right. I mean, who am I going to be standing outside the bubble the next time there's a bubble? No, it's going to have to be a deeper reflection than that because, you know, we're all accountable to participating in the bubble.
It's funny because we also we're not wired to understand. You know, if you look at a graph and you see a stock market and it drops 10%, and people say, and you say to somebody, "Okay, what is that when it does that?" And they and you show the graph where it's gone down 10%. They go, "That's a correction." And then you go, nope, it's the beginning of a crash. And then you show the rest of the graph. And then you look back and you go, wait a minute, why did I call it a correction? Because we're not wired to see things when if an event is going to happen. We perceive it in one way. And then when we look back and we, you know, the hindsight thing, we perceive it in an entirely different way and more accurate way, because now we actually see what the heck things were. Our brain and our hearts and our mind tend to judge us. We have a lot of self-judgment about, hey, wait a second, how come we didn't see it before the way I see it now? Well, that's the bummer part about being locked in the linearity of time. So give yourself a little bit of a break, right? And everything like this, this is part of people who don't give themselves, you know, much of a break for any kind of mistake. We were talking about the car crash, you know, and how that's an opportunity. Like say, you know, your partner bangs up the car. And I've been on the wrong end of this, you know, thinking like, what were you thinking? You know, what the heck? Didn't you notice? Didn't you blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if we remember, and this is this for people who are having financial reversals and really kicking themselves in the pants, here's a little self-healing, and you can do this back and forth with your partner. And you, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today was the power that we have over one another and the power that we have in the world that is completely underestimated. So we have the power when we, if the first thing people say, for example, if they lost a bunch of money or if they got sick and they say, I wasn't being very careful, most folks are actually more concerned about not standing up fully for their responsibility for others. I think that's what hits people more than anything. Like, think about nightmares you've had. Everyone, when you're a kid, and we're just egocentric kid, we have nightmares about running away from the bad guy or getting, you know, that dream when you're running and you're underwater and you can't get any purchase of your feet on the ground and the bad guy's coming. That's just basic visceral night. But when you get older, what kind of nightmares? Like, tell me like a nightmare where you'd have, you'd wake up and be disturbed.
Oh, like you mentioned that you're going to fall short of your responsibility to your children, your family, your role in life, your contribution.
Exactly. So it's the classic showing up and not being prepared for the test. It's the classic, where's my cat? There's a big wave coming and I can't find my cat. There's the classic, I'm supposed to be doing something and I'm confused and I don't know what that thing is. For most caring, thinking adults, and most of us are real emotional, you know, plus or negative charge stems from how we feel judged and how we judge ourselves and how others judge us. So we can give, and if we, once we acknowledge that, that means literally, you know, if I banged up my car driving to give a talk to 1,000 people and Kate's in the car and I get a little fender bender and I'm expecting, of course, Kate to say, you know, well, that's just great. We can't afford that. That's, yeah, thanks. I was able to have this car nice for 3 years and then you got a hold of it and now look at it. But if she said, I've always wanted a ding in the car, and then I show up and I tell the story to the audience and they love it and they go, good for you. And I really believe it. We have the power to say to anybody who is prepared to be shamed or is open to be shamed or to be what I call prided, and we can completely reframe anything that happens in life. So if somebody says, look, you're doing your best. You made the smart choices. You know, we did everything we could to avoid this virus, and now we have it, and there it is. And you don't have to lay that shame on the other person. You can actually take it as an opportunity to elevate the experience as being part of the larger narrative story of their life. You know, it's like, hey, we'll see where this takes us. And I've really been practicing that pretty well this month. I've had times in my life when I haven't, but I'm glad I ordered this book because it reminded me we have incredible power about how we make people feel. You know, like we were talking about this book that you're working on doing, right? This one, you've brought this up on the podcast.
A book about cold exposure, the benefits of cold exposure and how to do it.
Yeah. So let's just use this as an example. If I wanted, I have an opportunity to either make you feel good about that book or bad about that book. Everyone has that opportunity. And the closer and more respected the people in your life, the more power they have. But everyone, perfect strangers, have this power. So if you were to bring up this, so let's do a little skit here. So you bring up your book and I'll be I'm going to shame you, if that's okay. None of this is real. I'm just for display purposes only.
Right. We started talking offline. So just to set this up, you said we have a chance to either pride or shame people at any occasion, at any juncture throughout the day and throughout life. And it seems like the story you mentioned, we're more inclined to kind of throw the barbs out instead of start from that point of seeing how you can, dispense, good energy around. We seem to kind of react really quickly and get into this whodunit thing. Happens in relationships, it happens in families, among close people in your life. And hopefully we're going to solve that issue and figure out how we can come from a nicer place. But okay, I'm excited, and I'm telling you, Luke, I'm working on this really awesome book. It's about jumping into the cold water and experiencing the hormonal benefits and the psychological benefits.
Oh, so don't they already have stuff about that? I've heard, isn't there stuff about that already? I mean,
yeah, it's a really competitive marketplace, mine's good enough.
Well, I don't know. I think that maybe enough's been said on the subject. I mean, I don't know, maybe you're bringing something new into it, I guess, or?
Well, I don't know. Now you got me questioning.
Okay, right. Now let's not go any further down this, because I think it's a great idea. Okay, the book, I mean. But you get my point. If I could just continue to deliver a general negative charge toward you about this project that you're doing, and there are people who, just as a general practice, see anything as an opportunity to throw shade, right? To do a little shaming, to certainly not to be supportive, right? And sometimes they'll say, hey, look, I'm just being honest. You know, I'm from New York City. I don't BS anybody. I tell it like it is. No, I'm sorry. I don't care if you're from New York City. If you're spending your time diminishing the way people feel about themselves and their projects and, you know, everything else in their life, you're taking what could have been a wonderful opportunity to absolutely bolster somebody's, you know, to throw more testosterone into your bloodstream, to throw a little more,
estrogen if it's the female, testosterone if it's the male. Making someone be the best they can be with support is a huge deal. I've had my shows with John Gray, which we've talked about so much, and
yeah, right.
You know, the romantic partnership can make or break all kinds of things, your health, happiness, and especially your longevity. It can trash it, or it can boost it by 7 years. Happily married couples have this huge boost in longevity. And it's interesting that you bring up the wise ass with the quick trigger and the unfiltered mouth. And I have, I've had certain types of people like that in my life throughout my life. And I've really appreciated those people that are completely blunt and honest and direct, good or bad, because they give you that unfiltered scoop and you can process and appreciate it. And you can choose to disagree with them, but there's no nuance to it. And so therefore there's no potential to misinterpret or engage in a little the harmful game of when these things are disguised and sugarcoated. And I see that happening a lot, where innocent comments that if someone did challenge you and say, hey, what do you mean by that? You'd say, oh, I didn't mean to offend you, but you sort of did mean to offend me. And you did it in a cute little way that you couldn't get, it couldn't get pinned on you. But that's where I feel that insidious nature that we see so frequently, where, you know, either speak what you really want to say and say it straight up, or, seek to pride instead of shame.
Yeah. And that's where instinct comes in. And I've had those kind of people in my life too. I have a whole chapter in the book here, The God Academy. There's a whole chapter called The Law of the Dancing Demon. And the idea is that if you do have someone in your life where you perceive, and this is totally instinct, and good luck trying to explain to those people, you go, you know, you kind of spend a lot of time shaming me. And then the next thing you know, you're doing now you're in a courtroom. Really? No, you're the one who shames me. No, you shame me. And you're like, and here's something that's interesting. If you're with an aggressive personality, you know, with a friend or whatever, and I don't have, you know, much of that in my life, but I've had it on occasion. You know, everyone knows, you know, when you're with someone, you know what I'm talking about, everybody. If you get on the phone with somebody, whether it's you're talking to your mom or someone in your family or a friend you've had and you just don't know what to, but here's the key. When it's either a plus sign or minus sign. So when you're done talking to them, do you feel better about yourself or do you feel worse about yourself? Now, don't you dare. I'm telling you, do not examine it past that point. Your gut's right. If you feel less about yourself, there's a reason. Now, if you try to bring this up with the person and you enter a contest about, you know, who's at fault and all this kind of craziness about, you know, you make me feel, you know, you don't want to use that language, of course. But one thing I've come to realize is that, you know, I've always wondered why groupthink produces, you know, committee, right? Thinking by, you see a bad movie and they say, it seems like a movie made by committee, right? Okay, what's wrong with, what is inherently wrong with committees? What's the problem here? Here's the problem. If you take a committee and you have people bargaining with one another about ideas, if it's a committee, it two or more people, the person with the strongest will, not the best idea, with the strongest will win the day. Now, sometimes that is the person who coincidentally also has a really great idea, maybe even the best idea. But any committee will produce mostly the views of the people with the strongest views, with the strongest personalities, who push the hardest. But that doesn't say anything about the quality of their ideas. It speaks only of their personality. So if you have someone in your life who's kind of a negative, you know, force in your life, as defined by, you don't feel as good about yourself when you're with them, which, man, I'm telling you, this is the bottom line. If you have that and you try to contest with them, guess what? You're now in a committee situation and all you're really testing is a battle of wills. It's like taking two beta fish and throwing them into a tank and saying, which one's going to be alive next week? Next week, there will be one fish, not two. One will eat the other. Do you think it's the one with the better ideas or it's the one with the stronger will, the more aggressive personality, the biggest fish, you know, in terms of, you know, ego and just the stridency of their attack? It's just going to be the fish that has a stronger will. That's what committee thinking is. It's throwing eight fish, eight ideas into a tank. And the one that emerges is the one that fights the hardest, not the best. So with those people, what I say in the chapter, though, when you have people like that in your life, if they've been in your life for a while, it's almost certainly a time there. If they're there and you're like, God, why can't I get rid of this toxic person in my life, this toxic friendship or whatever? A lot of times it's there's something, they're there to teach you something. A lot of times it's if you find yourself saying to them, well, here's the deal. I will not be spoken to in that tone. Or I don't like it when you continually degrade every time I say I have a project. I'm not hearing a lot of, you know, way to go, you know. A lot of times it's just to teach, to remind you about, you know, the primacy of protecting your own self-respect. So even those kinds of people in your life have something to teach you. And once you've really learned it, you're not angry at them anymore. You can just move along. You'll be angry at the person in your life that you think is toxic right up to the moment that you learn, that they take from their hands the gift that they've been there to give you. You know what I'm saying? That's when you're not angry anymore, it means you've learned the lesson they came to teach you. If you're still angry, you haven't learned it yet.
At some point, you're hoping not to repeat the pattern and not to have these minuses. I like that simplification of saying plus or minus when you're talking about the people and the things that people you associate with and the things that you do. And you come home and you give yourself a plus or minus score. And if you got a bunch of minuses in your notebook, at a certain point, you're going to, I think what you're trying to say is, why do I keep putting the minus in my notebook? And maybe there's a reason in this time in your life and this journey that you're on, you have to learn these lessons. But boy, that's a tough way to go. Just like we talked about earlier, why can't we learn from, a concept instead of having to wade through it and learn the hard lessons ourselves? If you're writing too many minuses in your book, you got to change the dynamic of these relationships or move on in many cases.
And we tend to we tend to think that we have so much control that if we examine it enough, we can take a screwdriver and turn a screw about an eighth of a turn and recalibrate the relationship such that it's not hurtful to us anymore. But the bottom line is if it's minus sign, minus sign, minus sign. And this is so, and think about this. Think of it in terms of cinema, right? In a movie, what defines a scene or a sequence? Like what makes a movie, grab us and keep us, you know, the roller coaster ride? What makes it fun?
Well, the characters have to arc.
In terms of plot, yeah.
Right. The characters have to evolve over time. They have to face challenges and then overcome them. And that's kind of what we relate to in a good movie.
So let's talk about a challenge in a movie, right? So let's say the challenge is that a detective needs to find some clue, any clue, to give him a lead to who the murderer is, right? So he's frustrated, but then what does the writer give you after that?
A breakthrough and some hope and some inspiration, yeah.
Okay, that's a plus sign. Now, plus sign is, oh, good news, there's a clue. Great. Then what does the writer give you?
Conflict, dramatic conflict. Has to
negative
have that.
Negative sign. Right. Negative sign. Things are going good. Things are going bad. I mean, look at any of these, you know, super popular TV shows: Breaking Bad, Sopranos, Silicon Valley, Entourage. You know, any of them. What you'll see is a pattern of just reversal. Things are going great. Now things are going bad. Things are going great. Now things are going bad. So those reversals that spin you into a negative or a positive charge are the stuff of life. Stories mimic the way life works, right? So you take those reversals around, you don't have a story anymore. So if you think of yourself as being, you know, the main character of your own narrative, when we have these crazy things happening, you know, if you think of it just in terms of wanting to be in a state of constant gain, constant security, constant advancement, constant social and economic advancement, for example. Okay. Could make for a pretty comfortable life. Doesn't make for a very good story. That's
oh,
a boring
mercy.
Story.
Now you're kind
so
of
you
freaking.
Life,
yeah.
So, you know, if it's a story, you got to decide. Do you want it to be an interesting story or the one where someone was born and everything went fine and then they died?
Yeah. You're kind
Take
of freaking me out, man. We're kind of, because we're compelled to live our lives like a movie. And bring this drama and bring these setbacks into position so that we can have something to fight against and maintain our own interest, I guess. And that's a little disturbing because that means that we're inviting relationship drama, relationship conflict. We're self-sabotaging so that we can have a setback to battle against and feel whole again. And when it comes to real life, I don't know. I'd probably vote. I'd raise my hand and say, yeah, I'd like less drama, fewer setbacks and more sure. prosperity and good times and happiness. And I don't really, want to learn from all these struggles, but we seem to, if we, you
seems
know,
it's a reasonable thing to say, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, if we all were really honest and admit this, we've all done this and that includes, you know, picking a petty conflict at the end of a long, a great family vacation or whatnot, you know, people just get off kilter a little bit and, you know, try to get that electrical charge going rather than, you know, peace and tranquility at all the time.
Well, it's unfortunate. There are many, many people who sense that they want their life's story to be more dramatic. That they are when you everyone's known somebody a whirlwind kind of person, and I come from very poor, very difficult upbringing, Clinton, Iowa, and I know looking around there are people who create drama for drama's sake, and we think that they're doing it because often they're narcissistic and they want all attention to be put on them, or maybe they're just lost. But a lot of times they feel there's no plot point in my life. Every day is the same as the last. Do you remember the movie Groundhog Day?
Yes.
How would you describe that plot?
The guy's stuck in a repeating pattern due to whatever magical forces with the groundhog in the town. And so he wakes up every day and he's the only one that realizes he's in the pattern. Everyone else is just living the same life every single day.
Right. So he's stuck in this pattern of living the same life every day. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What if I was to propose to you that it's exactly the opposite, and that's why it's a great movie? See, the way people mostly feel in their daily lives is, most unhappy people, is they say every day is like the day before. There's no plot point. They hate it when they hear, hey, it's like life. You get out of it what you put into it. And they go, not me. Not me. It's the same day all the time. Groundhog Day is the kind of life we want to have. It's the opposite. Before he entered that Pizzicani town or whatever it was called, before that, he was just a run-of-the-mill, average weathercaster hitting, in a CAD, hitting on every woman around him. Kind of a jerk. Every day for him was the same. So he was on rails, man. Once he entered that town, every day he woke up, once he realized, oh, I'm stuck in a pattern here, every day he learned something new. Every day he made a slight change. He made a slight advancement toward his goal, which was not self-preservation. It was not money. It was get the girl. That's all he cared about. And every day was slightly different, slightly better. He worked at it. He took piano lessons and became an expert pianist, right? He became a medical expert. He learned about everybody in the town. He learned French poetry, for God's sakes. This is a man who's every day changing, which means every day that he woke up was a new day. Yeah, it was the same song every day, right? I got you, babe. But everything else advanced. And that's how life should feel. It should feel like Groundhog Day.
And
when people don't have that, they look for plot points. Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what for him every day was. For him, every day felt like a plot point. So he was happy. He had a goal, and every day spun him into a slightly different trajectory. So every day was different than the one that followed. So that's why it's a brilliant movie, by the way, because what you said is exactly correct. That is the plot. Guy wakes up the same day every day. The reason it's beautiful is that inside that framework, it's actually secretly exactly the opposite. And so when we have these kinds of reversals, like a lot of us are having right now, okay, baby, that's a plot point. That counts. Now, if people were not financially hurt, if they don't have people who are sick, if their job is not affected, if you're a restaurant, if you're in a business where this is just something you're kind of watching from a safe remove, okay, lucky you, but you don't get the plot point. You don't get a chance to spin your life into a different trajectory. There's a line out of Bill Merwin, William S. Merwin, possibly our greatest living American poet of the past 50 years, and the line is this: you that lose nothing, know nothing. There's no, and like we said before, you can't know the miracle. Remember Shakespeare, where he says, what a piece of work is a man? And he's looking at the absolute miracle of the human hand. Anyone seen the Dawn Wall? You want to know somebody knows how miraculous a hand is? Talk to that guy who cut his finger off. For him, he realized, oh my God, every single finger on your hand is its own independent miracle. And that's why he grieved it. But what did he do? The next order of business for him to say, God, my whole body's a miracle. And he had a whole new drive, a whole new appreciation to go take that wall. And he did. But you can't know what a miracle your hand is just by shaking it around and feeling all the thousands of little intricate structures inside. You get in a motorcycle accident and rip your transverse metacarpal ligament, and you can't use your hand for 2 years. You go, my God, what a thing this thing is. But you need that reversal in order to take that knowledge in and really own it. And so any reversal that you feel, think of it as a plot point in the narrative. It's going to be, you got tough times, but your life is a better show. It's a more interesting narrative now.
Or I guess, like you were talking about earlier, even the idea of a reversal, or to, consider the idea of not being able to use your legs, maybe you'll have a different appreciation for ascending the staircase rather than walking around, taking everything for granted. Bruce Lipton's book, Biology of Belief, he says we're 95% of the time operating from flawed subconscious programming. So we're living our lives just in sort of a robotic mode where we're not conscious and therefore, you know, less capable of appreciating the moment and the experience and not judging and, you know, getting out of that FOMO mindset, fear of missing out, all those kind of things that we're most of the time engaged in. The brain science shows that 96% of our thoughts are identical to yesterday's. And 80% of those thoughts are negative.
Right.
So, you know, we're waking up and guess who's helping us along this journey is the media and the distortion of reality that's, you know, designed to elicit our fears and anxieties because that's what sells and that's what the machine wants. And so, you know, we're waking up every day looking at a new, you know, life-changing headline with news about the outbreak and all these kind of things. And we're going into negative mindset and we're repeating the same thoughts and same patterns. So I guess you've kind of covered a lot of the content of the God Academy, but if you want to dip in to kind of frame it, whatever we haven't covered, and also tell me kind of the opening premise of writing this book, which was sort of a parody and it was written by a different author and it was making fun of kind of what we see in that realm, but kind of set the tone a little bit for that.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking. I hope people have, you know, here's the book, God Academy. And, well, it kind of happened like this. I was teaching, at the University of Hawaii, in Kauai, pre-tenure track, great job, great kids. The first I'd open up the class, a lot of the kids, their English would not be, you know, the best by mainland English standards, but they spoke English, but they also spoke pidgin. That's two languages. So I'd start the class and saying, you know, our first lesson's going to be a lesson for me. I need an assignment that you need me to write in pidgin. And they'd give me an assignment. And they said, well, you're going to, oh, you have to write one peppa. Professor, and I'm like, yeah, you're gonna. And then I do my best. I do my homework. Go in the next day, sit on the floor, which was deliberate, and have them correct me and mock me for how awful my pidgin was, all the errors I was making. So it was those kinds of things that got me a reputation as a different kind of teacher. And over time, faculty and students and all this, I kind of got a reputation as somebody people could just go talk to. You know, if they're, and a lot of kids are going through some really rough stuff, you know, they're kids with, you know, they've just been recently diagnosed with, you know, HIV, and other ones are getting beat up at home. Others are working six jobs and haven't slept and they're, you know, have to take speed to stay awake and all kinds of interpersonal stuff. And teachers would come with students who were having troubles and ask me for advice sometimes. And I got better at it. And I was teaching simultaneously a lot of like comparative mythology, you know, and English literature. And there was a lot of lessons in there. Of course, I would naturally just draw from those in order to try to help people out. So over the years, I just, you know, got into this mode. I didn't charge anybody anything. I just became this kind of go-to source. And I really enjoyed it. I like being helpful. And so later, Kate and I moved to New Hampshire and I said, I should kind of take some of these lessons and put them in a book. But like you said, it was a little bit of a kick in the pants to the secret specifically, because I'd read that and it, you know, everyone in California and Hawaii was, you got to read The Secret. And I said, you know, I actually believe in this attraction concept. I mean, I don't know where you come down on that, Brad, but I'm telling you, I'm a believer. I'm saying it to the whole world.
Tell us the premise of The Secret. This was a best-selling book.
Yes. So the central idea, the core concept is that, they don't put it this way, but I put it this way, is that every thought you have is in fact a prayer. There's no such thing as a thought. It's a prayer. And out it goes. And different people have maybe, you know, are on a different scale of how true this is for them. But for me, the thoughts I have do come true. Sometimes when I don't want them to. But as a scientist, you know, I can't ignore the evidence that's right in front of me. And this has been the case my whole life. And I've had to try, and I've tried to train. This is part of the book, The God Academy. I talk about the benefits of lucid dreaming. A lucid dream, as you know, is one of those, is a dream where you wake up inside the dream in the sense that you can go, oh, I'm dreaming. This is a dream. And then you can start to control the dream. Oh, I think I'll try flying. I'll do this. I'll reset the stage. Now I'm in the Taj Mahal. It's my mind. And that experience of a lucid dream reminds you that, you know, as they say, life is but a dream. It's true. And it's not a truth that you can prove on a blackboard, but it's a truth that a lot of people have in a moment of epiphany. And once you get that, you're stuck with it, man. You can't get rid of it. It's a thorn in your soul, but a good one, because it's always prodding you, reminding you, hold it. Don't get too angry at this. Don't get too attached to that. This thing's a dream. It's not a put on. It's as real as anything gets, but it's a dream. My personal belief is that, you know, I said in the God Academy, you know, many times in the final chapter, I said, look, realize you are God. And I try to define what that means. You are God. And when I say that, the idea is that if you believe that there is some sort of God consciousness, and I don't mean some underlying matrix that, you know, used us as consciousness, as a probe to understand the universe. No, if you go a step further than that and go so far as to say that God has a consciousness, then it becomes evident then that the entire universe, including us, are an attempt for God to better understand every aspect of his own spiritual landscape. It means we are all probes, like tendrils of a plant reaching out to taste all the minerals of the dirt within 100 miles. Because to do that is for God to better understand himself. And if you feel like if you get this epiphany, which people could say, I don't buy it. I've never had the epiphany. It sounds like a lot of BS to me. I dig. But if you've had one of those moments, a lot of religious people have, a lot of non-religious people have, you know, so-called spiritualist people, just regular people go, oh, I get it. But there's even a philosopher that suggests that, you know, there's a very high likelihood mathematically that we're all figments of a very extensive software program. You've probably heard that. But the idea being that if you believe that there's, you know, more to this, to our philosophy, that more to the world than is dreamt of in our philosophy, then this idea of attraction suggests that thoughts are things. I think of them as prayers, and that they can, in fact, if they're powerful, bring about those events. Now, begs the question, what if two people have a very, very strong thought and they're attracting incompatible realities, right? I mean, that's a simple scientific question. That's a reasonable retort. I would say the answer to that is that the life we're living right now, the thing that connects us all together is that we are all in the midst of a collision of provisional realities, each reality being spontaneously created by each of us and living in a kind of concordat agreement with one another. But they're always like a super collider. They're always banging into each other, setting each other's trajectories in different directions. This mass collision of provisional realities that we're all dreaming up with our thoughts is what we call the daily life. And within that context, you realize if you start to notice it, that yes, we do bring about realities. So that's one of the main concepts of my book as well. The difference, one of the key differences between my book, God Academy, and The Secret is that I don't think that thinking about cars and big houses and making as much money as possible is the end game. And I think there's a much, much bigger picture afoot, and you really miss the boat if you don't see that. So I see this as sort of, that's why I call it a masterclass. It's okay. If you had the, you know, the grade school version of this concept, step up and get your PhD.
So most people are familiar with this law of attraction, and manifesting wealth has become a popular concept, yeah. Popular topic. I think there's a lot of misinterpretation going on. And Luke Story, one of my podcast guests, Lifestylist podcast host, he explained it really well, where he said, if you're not living in a position of gratitude right now, you're cut off from these amazing, powerful forces where you can attract the man of your dreams. And he's got a trim beard and he's 6'1" and he drives this kind of car. All these things that people claim are so powerful and so true and work for them as they live in their house on top of the hill. And you do a good job making fun of that, all that nonsense in the book.
Right.
But you know, the powers of manifestation, I'm starting to pay more attention to them, and I appreciate the concept very, very much so. But you know, the way Luke prefaced it was great, because he said, if you're not in that position of gratitude right now and grateful for what you have and who you are and where you are, then you're cut off from these forces and powers. And if you're thinking that manifesting something and bringing it in is then going to make you happy, content, and balanced and all that, you're completely missing the point. So that was a good setup for the people that scoff at first notion that you manifested this car because you dreamed about it. And I think you're still on that same wavelength too, where you're kind of ridiculing the misinterpretation of these concepts and going deeper.
Absolutely. And most definitions that you'll find in a book like The Secret, I find those definitions so narrow as to be as destructive as sunlight through a magnifying glass, you know, aimed at some, you know, at a balsa wood house. It's a nice entry point idea, but it sets the larger point aflame. It loses the plot. Give you an example. You know, when people think about people need a smaller ego, right? You have a big ego. You have a small ego. Forget size of ego. Nature of ego. There's not the first chapter in the book, Law of Ego, talks about expanding your ego to encompass all things. And there's a word for that, by the way, how the fact that you are not just you, you are everything that you touch and influence. It's called influence. And that's the actual you. The physical body that goes around influencing thing, that's the probe. That's just the vehicle that you use to walk around and influence. It's the mushroom that pops out that you can see above the ground. But the entire giant plant, this mass organism that's a shape that's in the shape of a ring, it can be a mile wide, that's the real you. So the real us is influence. So I bring that up because when he talked about being in a state of gratitude, I also have a chapter about this and called Law of Infinite Return. The idea is to be in a state of gratitude must extend beyond even, I'm great to have my car, I'm happy to have my car, I'm happy to have my relationship, I'm happy to this and this and this. Let me just real quickly tell you what I mean by that. If right now, Brad, you went outside, jumped in your car, drove across town, bought some beef jerky and came back, just on a whim, right? You were like, I don't know why I did that. It was out of nowhere, right? The other day, Kate, it was a great moment. I'm not spontaneous enough, and Kate's trying to teach me about this, but I said, let's just go get sushi just because I want to. And she was great. She goes, okay. And we went, and I go, wow, this feels weird. You know, this. But if you were to do that, do something totally spontaneous, if you were to take a quarter and go outside and put it on the sidewalk, it has absolutely, and this isn't a spiritual reality only, this is a mathematical truism. It's written about in chaos theory, the whole butterfly causing a hurricane. Every little thing that you do has a massive impact necessarily about the state of the entire world a year from now. Do you know what I mean? Every single action you take and everything that happens to you, will the consequences of that will ripple out until the state of the entire planet will be measurably different. Who's going to be president could have changed because you went and got beef jerky. This is a mathematical truism, because you go there, that affects the guy who's selling the beef jerky. He goes home, he walks into his house 3 minutes later than he would have otherwise, because he closed up the shop a little bit later, because this and that, which caused his wife to da-da-da, and so on. The ramifications of all our choices are infinitely powerful, and the only time that the influence stops is when the influence is saturated on the whole world. But even then, that influence continues year after year after year after year. The longer period of time, you can imagine it as kind of a cone of influence. Your choice to get the beef jerky will have a given amount of influence by tomorrow. Not much, but some. By the end of the week, far greater. By the end of the month, year, 5 years. The cone of influence. So what that means is, if we're grateful, imagine this. You hear about an airplane crash. 300 people die. Massive, horrible, terrible. imagine that you got to know one of the people who died very, very, very well, and you know that they're a wonderful person, right? They do a kitty cat rescue, and not the Tiger King kind, you know, a nice person. And you heard they died. And the mathematical gods come to you. God himself says, well, I'll tell you what. Remember how you had a poker game last year and you won $500? Remember how happy you were? And you go, yeah, that was great. I never win. That was a great day. Yeah, it was like I couldn't lose. And he goes, okay. But I tell you what, because of the nature of the cone of influence, the cone of consequence, if you were to lose $100 that night, that plane won't crash. And you go, what? Wait, what? If we buy the idea, the chaos concept that a butterfly can cause a hurricane, it's a much, much less wild and novel concept to see that something as big as winning $500 can influence whether an airplane winds up hitting something on the airstrip or runs into some geese, right? Like the plane that landed in the Hudson. Imagine. So what does that mean? That means to be grateful for what we have in the here and now is still a little bit narrow. That's about stuff. We have no idea. You know, if you say you're grateful for your car and then you get in a car crash, you can't be too grateful or ungrateful about the car even, because you have to consider this. I don't know if this is going to save 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 lives in a year or if it won't. I'll never know. That's just the nature of life. But what I do know is me being in a small car crash, thankfully nobody got hurt, but that is going to have massive influence down the road. And it might have influence that will wind up touching people who you would have chosen. Looking backward, if you knew everything, if you had the omniscient mind, you might go, oh, actually, I'm cool with the car crash. Leave that in the story, because that wound up being a good thing for all these people that didn't happen to be me, but for other people down the road.
That's heavy, man. It's tough to get your head around it. But if you can live your life in that manner, thinking that your impact is massive and has this massive ripple effect, that's possibly a very good way to go. And to be more thoughtful and deliberate and more kind and try to pride instead of shame and all those things.
Right. When, like you said, it totally undermines the idea that security is real, that our control is real, that things are real. If you really have an empathetic, loving, godlike heart that says, you know, I'm pretty cool with losing a card game. I mean, imagine Seth, what's his name that does all the voices, does a Family Guy and all that? Seemingly a wonderful guy. He does a great Kirk
impersonation. McFarlane, yeah.
Like, thank you, Seth MacFarlane. Okay, you might know the story. He just barely missed that one of the flights that flew into the buildings. He just missed that flight by a hair or half an hour. But, you know, it was pretty close. And I didn't know that story. And you think, huh, what if you were playing poker with Seth the week before and you won? And you go, ha ha, Seth, I got $500 off you. See you next time. And you're all happy with yourself. It's so fantastic. Or, and say you lose and you're all down and you feel shame because you're not a very good card player and you have to go home and tell your partner, oh, not a good night. You can't know if that was a good thing until a week later where Seth goes, it's funny because after I, you know, let's say that you took his $500 and he goes, I was kind of upset because I like to think of myself as a good card player. And I stayed up till 2 a.m. just feeling like a total boob. And I've been sleeping. And that kind of set me for the whole week. I've been sleeping too late. And then on the day for the flight, I woke up a little bit late, missed the flight. And you go, oh, so that's the influence of a card game in the period of 1 week. So that means everything that happens to us, we have no idea. Know this, you know, if you take a quarter, place it in the center of a sidewalk, you just changed the world. And I mean the world. And I don't mean metaphorically. I mean, for real. You haven't changed that in that hour. If someone comes and sees it and picks it up, okay, that's the entry point to how you're beginning to change the world, which means just because we're blind to it doesn't mean it's not happening. And if that's true, that means if that's, and here's where faith comes in. If seeming reversals in your life feel horrible, you have to go, you know what? I have no idea what the consequences of this is. I know it's not very good for me right now, but I just changed earth, man. The whole thing for every living human being and every animal. I've changed earth. How long will that take to have happened? A year or so, maybe less.
Wow.
But I've changed the world.
That's how powerful we are. Yeah, I think that's a nice conclusion here, Luke, because we're existing in this time where your statement is validated by our actions to shut down this pandemic and every little thing we do and every person we touch. So if you're selfishly going off to get some beef jerky or traveling on a jet, I don't know who's still flying places now. Might be some really important business people that are getting on an airplane, exposing the flight attendant to everyone they've exposed themselves to, and so on, this ripple effect. So what a great time to converse about the powers. And we can learn more in the fabulous book with the unveiled author, pseudonym Angelica Crystal Powers. It's called The God Academy, a master class in the power of attraction. And where do we go find out about this, on Amazon or anywhere books are sold?
Available on Amazon. And like I said, this pandemic is a perfect example. You know, somebody might have felt really, really good that that there was some meat that was left out a little longer than it should have been, or however this thing started in that province in China. And he no doubt felt really good that he got to sell that meat that maybe wasn't so great. And you go, okay, well, enjoy your, $2. But just so you know, that's going to have a little bit of an effect.
Like, oh, mercy.
More than a $2 sale. And I think, so we see, like, I want to just focus on that for one last second, because that's a perfect, you brought up the perfect example. In the way that small outbreak from what seems to be, the mishandling of these not very pleasant, wild animal markets that have live and dead animals and the whole thing, right? Which is, kind of a metaphor for sin in a way. It's unwholesome. You see a place like that and you go, we're not doing something. Something's wrong here. It's like going to one of those massive, hog killing facilities. You say, okay, well, if there's hell on earth, here it is, But we see how a tiny, tiny act, and you say to that person at that marketplace, just a humble, person just selling their meat, and you go, hey, just so you know, your actions have really big consequences, like bigger than you think. And I go, really? And you go, give it a few months. Give it 6 months. You'll be surprised how powerful you are. You can change the world. The good news is we can do the same thing for the better. But it definitely means that examining any single event that happens in your life in that tiny little context, as opposed to being part of the larger tapestry of the narrative that we're all engaged in, is myopic and ridiculous. So keep changing the world and don't judge yourself too much, because you don't know what the consequences of your actions are. Move in faith, move with love, do your best, and that's it.
Luke Shanahan, love it. Thank you for joining us. Good stuff, man.
Thanks. It's always great to talk.
We'll check back in another book. We'll check back in a year and discover the ripple effect of this here podcast.
Hey, that's no joke, man. We'll see. Buy the book, people. Have me on again. And, I promise you I'm coming from a good place. And I have no intention. It's another thing I learned this month. I have no intention of ever getting rich, but I do want to be influential. I want to do good. I want to make some noise. And that's a happy place to be.
Da, 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 da. Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves, because they need to. Thanks for doing it.